The Production Expert Podcast is brought to you with the kind support of Arturia, Avid, Source Elements, and RSBE Audio Solutions.
Welcome to the Production Expert Podcast. I'm Julian Rogers, and in this week's edition, Ashara and I are joined by Oliver Thomas and Maurice Patiste from PMC. Welcome both.
Hello.
Actually, welcome all three. I don't know why I left you out of that, Ashara.
How dare you?
So we're going to be talking about loudspeakers because PMC, for those who aren't familiar with this fine company, is the professional monitor company. I won't explain what they do because it's pretty obvious from the name. So anyway, I think really we should kind of orientate ourselves on exactly who we're talking to, actually. So could you both kind of tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do at PMC, and kind of maybe a little bit of backstory about how you came to be where you are at the moment? I mean, Ollie, would you like to start on that?
Yeah, sure. So where I currently am at PMC is I am the commercial director. And that role encompasses lots of things, which I don't think I even really understand all of them. But that kind of came as a development from engineering and a chief technical officer. So I'm in charge of all of the engineering departments at PMC, from design to service to manufacturing engineering and all of the techie things. And that comes from kind of working my way up through PMC, through the various engineering and design departments. My first role at PMC was actually as a relatively junior R&D engineer way back when, many years ago. And before that, I was working in the automotive and motorsport sector. And that was kind of where I started out in my engineering career, working for a couple of different automotive engineering companies, and then moving into a Formula One team, and then ditching all of that life and coming to audio.
Excellent.
The other thing which got me into PMC is I tried to stay away from the family business and audio for a while.
Oh, yes, I brought that up, didn't I? Apologies.
and it was something that the founder and owner of the company, who is my father, tried to keep me away from for as long as possible, and I tried to keep myself away from it, and then we accidentally found that it worked out very well with me in design here.
Excellent. I mean, I know that working with family isn't always easy. I've not done it, but my partner used to work with her mother, and that wasn't necessarily kind of like you think. Oh, that must be easy. No.
I can't imagine it would be.
Yeah. Anyway,
on the off chance that, and probably people from my family will listen to this, I'm going to say nothing.
So diplomacy as well as engineering chops, excellent. Okay, Maurice, what about you? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, 21 years ago, I somehow ended up working with PMC after having worked with their products for about 2 years back in the day with the Dutch distributor of PMC. Actually, at the time, I had my own live sound company for about a good 10 years in the Netherlands, and ended up somehow in the studio with a band that wanted to kind of recreate what they were doing live in the studio. And one of those days, I ended up sitting in front of a pair of PMCs and was like, what are those? And, you know, it was that experience that kind of got me in touch with the Dutch distributor, who really liked what I was doing, asked me to come over, and ended up doing a couple of events with him, ended up meeting Peter and at the time Miles Roberts, and got to know them and really kind of bought into the whole philosophy of what PMC was all about and what Peter's vision was for the company. And then I got married, had a son, decided that touring life was over, decided to sell the company. And at the same time, I got the lovely offer from Peter to come and work for PMC, which was indeed now 21 years ago. Ended up working throughout Europe initially, working with all the major studios and trying to bring the brand out, because 21 years ago, we were not the size as we are right now, but had an amazing time and really bought into what we felt PMC was all about in regards to being a tool for engineers to create the best music they possibly can. Mm-hmm. And since then, I ended up now being, and as they do in the States, they love titles, right? You know, the business cards titles, but apparently it's President PMC USA, whatever that means, as well as the head of pro audio for the global market. And so, yeah, that was a long journey. Have done literally anything and everything within the company, you know, from building speakers to packing them up, being in the warehouse and doing everything that's needed to get the product out. But also being involved with music production as an engineer myself. And actually, our whole team here in the US is all based out of engineers or former clients, actually. There are no salespeople working here. They're all literally engineers. And I think that has helped a lot inside our company, that we can relate to what our clients actually are going through. And we can talk about anything and everything, even but the speakers, which makes it for far more interesting conversations, I think. But yeah, that's what I've been up to.
And am I right in thinking you're hand-built in the UK?
Yeah, absolutely. Every single PMC speaker is hand-built in the UK.
Wow.
By a selection of either skilled craftsmen or engineers. And each of those assembly workers is involved in the build of the speaker and then also the final test, which involves both measurement and listening. We have a great team of staff. And much like Maurice was saying about the US team, everyone has some kind of link to music and audio, which goes beyond working at PMC. Outside of that, they are musicians, they are secret ravers, they are people that like to design all kinds of audio gear for hobbies.
Mm. And obviously that helps with your design of the products, so sort of collaborating with audio engineers and people in music, right? I assume that's important to you, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's sort of like, yeah, the blood runs through everyone.
Well, and that part definitely was really crucial in regards to the development, especially of the new lines and all that were really collaborations with a lot of our clients, engineers, producers, you name it, getting all that information and feedback to develop basically the new line that we have right now. And I think that was really a testament to the relationships that we have. And, you know, out of that came the product that you know, people really wanted to have as a tool for their production. So that part is really crucial. I mean, we don't thankfully have an engineering team that just goes out and engineers something that then everybody needs to buy somehow. No, it went the other way around, where products were developed by and for engineers and then created into something that could be commercially available. So I think that's definitely one of our strengths.
Yeah. And so is it too soon to maybe ask you about the sort of really obvious question, which is the ATL speakers that exist today? I know that they've existed since the 70s and you've sort of been developing this over 30 years, which is really fantastic. But I think a lot of us would love to know how that works and why it is so important to having such sort of transparency and accuracy when listening with your speakers.
Well, yeah, no, it's the best thing to dive straight into and is, I think, kind of often overlooked by a lot of people. Even people that have been working on PMCs and own PMCs for a while, I start talking about transmission line to them, they kind of say, oh, what is that? Do my speakers have that? And, you know, I respond like, yes, that's the big PMC thing. That's our thing. How do you not know? But yeah, it is essentially almost our USP now. We are one of the very, very few companies that make a speaker with transmission line technology. And as you correctly pointed out, we coin our version of transmission line the ATL, which is advanced transmission line, which is our design trademark. And that has a few kind of intricacies which separates it from a typical transmission line design, which, as you pointed out, has been experimented with a few key manufacturers since the 70s. And there's research papers dating back to, I think, the 50s or 60s, which kind of outline some of the basic physics and mathematics that relate to it. So what it is an enclosure design technology, which allows us to augment the low frequency, the bass frequencies from the speaker, and also clean up some of the lower frequencies and lower distortion. I suppose now this is normally where I say, well, how kind of like, how much of a detailed explanation do we go into?
I mean, our listeners are sort of all audio professionals mostly, so you can go into a fair bit of detail, I would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, we like to start by comparing to the other ways that you can design a loudspeaker enclosure, like a seal box or infinite baffle design, which is kind of nailing a drive unit in a box. So yeah, so the three ways that you can design a loudspeaker enclosure, or the three main ways, is a sealed box, an infinite baffle design, a reflex or ported box, and a transmission line. Mm. There's other There's other kind of acoustic principles that you can design the enclosure around, but those are the three main ones. So a sealed box being kind of exactly what it sounds, a drive unit in a sealed box, which prevents the sound waves coming from the rear of the drive unit negatively interacting with the sound waves coming from the front and cancelling each other out. It's a pretty good all-rounder. To go kind of what we'd consider one step further in terms of acoustic enclosure design, you might design something like a ported or reflex box, which has a hole cut in the side of it and maybe a pipe as well. And this allows a pressure equalization between that drive unit and the enclosure and the air in the room. And it also resonates at a certain frequency, exactly like blowing over the top of a bottle of wine. I normally use a milk bottle as that reference, but I think I'm thirsty. So bottle of wine is on my mind now. And you get like that, you get that that resonant frequency, that reinforced one note. And it kind of works the same as that. So the energy in the cabinet excites at this certain frequency or narrow band of frequencies. And you can use that to boost essentially the low frequency of the whole speaker system. And then you can kind of go one step further than that and wander into a transmission line, which is essentially a long folded tunnel connected to the back of a drive unit, which we fold around so we can fit it into a sort of a rectangular shaped box because we love making rectangular shaped speakers. And then it vents to the room or the space outside the speaker through a vent. And that tunnel is lined with absorbing materials, which take away the unwanted mid and high frequency energy, which is coming off the rear of the drive unit in the enclosure. So it absorbs all of that energy, which means that the mid-range characteristic of that speaker system is super low distortion. And we can reuse that low frequency energy, much like you do in a reflex design, and it augments all of the lower frequencies. The key difference being that the way a transmission line works, and it's the quarter wave pipe resonance, which is the acoustic principle it revolves around, because it's a much lower Q, higher damped resonance, it works over a broad range of frequencies. So you can extend the low frequency response of your speaker without, for lack of a better word, bass becoming boomy, which is what you get if you kind of accentuate just one frequency, just one note. Right. How was that?
That was good. That was good. It sort of has the benefit of freeing up the mid-range, right? So I've read, which is, you know, obviously helps for making bass punchier and just sort of mixing vocals and all those things. But the acoustic foam as well, I've heard that it's quite difficult to make these particular speakers. It can be expensive and time-consuming. So maybe that's why we don't see so much of this design in other products. Is that correct?
Yeah, totally. There's a whole load of things going on inside of a transmission line enclosure, which makes it expensive to manufacture and lengthy and resourceful to design as well. We have lots of simulation software which helps us get a pretty good idea of exactly how an enclosure and a drive unit design is going to perform all as one system. But you still are looking at going through a number of iterations of prototyping and development to refine that design into a world-class speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And for each of those steps with the transmission line design, due to the complexity of all of the different variables involved, the cost is high on design. And then when you get into manufacturing, as you said, you've got this incredibly high-performance absorbing material, which is used throughout the cabinet. You've also got the cabinet construction itself, where all these panels have to be perfectly sealed together so there's no air leaks, and there is a lot of panels inside the enclosure. So a lot of cost goes into the box. And a lot of people are not so keen to do that because of the costs involved. But also, when you look at our speakers, they look like someone else's speakers. You're not seeing where your money is going, which is inside this enclosure, inside the box, which does so, so much to make our speakers the best in the world. You can't see this technology.
Right, but you are hearing it because a lot of mixers sort of rage about your products, like Greg Wells, and you know, it's really important as a mix engineer, as everyone knows, that we have to hear accurately.
I mean, it's the nicest thing is to hear all the feedback from all of these world-famous, world-leading mix and mastering engineers after they're working on our products and praising us. And I'm glad that we're giving them what they need. And it is through technologies such as ATL, which reduce the distortion, which kind of gives them that.
Ever wondered what it's like to mix an entire album for Kanye?
Or layering vocals for Chris Brown?
Join your hosts, Cash and G, every fortnight as we sit down with some of your favourite artists,
producers,
and engineers to talk everything music.
Brought to you by Avid Pro Tools.
That sounds great.
Coming in briefly here on this, the transmission line, absolutely. You know, I mean, I'm convinced, and I've sort of got things to say about that, but I absolutely take your point about... I'm a huge woodwork snob. I see a lot of speakers, and I always perform the knock test before I even set them up. They'll come out of the box, and I'll just tap the panels, and that tells you so much about what you're going to hear. But I am aware that that kind of thing you can't realize a well braced loudspeaker cabinet in DSP. You know, it's like there's only one way to do it, and it's not going to get any cheaper.
Yeah, exactly. There's this kind of like mechanical, practical side to it too.
But with all of that stuff going on inside this folded line that's going down the cabinet, inherently that's just like, that's the most thorough bracing job you can do, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of like, I can't think of a way of making a stronger cabinet. I'm sure if you were to lose one of those down a flight of stairs, the stairs are going to lose. It's kind of like, I don't want to think about that actually.
Yeah, you're right about the bracing. I mean, I know people that spend, like there's a whole chapter of their design in enclosure design, which is figuring out how to brace the cabinet walls so they don't vibrate, so that they pass the knock test, the Julian knuckle knock test.
But you know what I'm saying, don't you? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. But with a transmission line design, you basically don't even need to do that. There's so many panels in the cabinet. You're right. It's so fully braced. Mm. There is no kind of bracing design needed. It's solid.
Mm, absolutely. I mean, when we're talking about these things, you're preaching to the choir on this one, just because I've had some here relatively recently, and that was all up on the site, and I said some very, very sincere but flattering things about the 6.2s that I was trying out, because they were great. They were a long way from being the first PMCs that I've heard. I've heard lots of PMCs in all sorts of places, but there is something different about hearing them at your place with your stuff, with only you choosing exactly what you hear. I've heard the big ones. I'm terrible on the names of things. MB2.
Oh well, as are we. The naming of our products is interesting, varied.
Not the really big ones, but like the big kind of Atmos install, like kind of like, you know, like the booth running.
You're right. MB2s or MB3s.
Yeah, what you've got set up at some studio in London, and that's.
Which, by the way, is where I am currently sat and recording from.
Oh
right. What, in the room?
The room.
I'm in Studio London.
Excellent. Which, I mean, it's a fantastically set up space. The thing about it is it can be quite difficult to relate to, just because you come away going, that was pretty overwhelming, hearing, you know, some really stunning Dolby Atmos mixes across a, you know, well set up top flight monitoring system like that. But when you've got a pair at your place, it's just kind of like, ah, now I get it. And my overwhelming thing, you've already referred to it, Ashay, was the thing about not hearing the cabinet.
Mm.
And that's really interesting to me, because that line's kind of doing two things, isn't it? We don't spend the whole time only talking about the transmission line, but we've kind of got to go in there thoroughly. So what it does to the bass and what it does to the mid-range. So can we kind of like dig into that a little deeper before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, just on the mid-range front, absolutely. I hinted with it with the absorbing materials in the box. And a long tapered, in fact, what a transmission line is by definition is a long tapered line, which would taper down to an infinitely small point, which isn't actually what our cabinets do, because we have a big vent on the front. We vent the end of the line. It is an open ended pipe. But the true transmission line would be to taper that down to a point to absorb those upper mid range high frequencies perfectly. It still has that effect. It still has a very good effect on that. And yeah, if we've got like a two-way speaker like the PMC6, it's even better, because you have a lot more unwanted mid-range frequencies radiating off the rear of the woofer, which you really need to carefully absorb. But even on something like a three-way product like the PMC6-2, the low-frequency drive units and the enclosure is working up to something like 500 hertz. And a lot of that rear radiated energy, if you absorb it with the foam, it stops it from essentially reflecting around in the cabinet and negatively influencing the moving part, the diaphragm of the drive unit. And so that's what you then hear as really clean mid-range and bass. Through measurement, it's distortion. Or lack of.
Absolutely. And I mean, yeah, like I say, it was my overwhelming kind of overriding impression of those PMCs when I had them here was that. Tried them at a friend's studio against some really, really nice monitors. I mean, we weren't kind of running them up against some kind of sort of inferior rubbish or anything, you know. Absolutely, you know. And yeah, it was night and day. You could just completely hear it, and it makes you. It surprises me that we hear that we don't hear that cabinet reflection, you know, more consciously than we do, because we're probably kind of used to it. Kind of, it's the sound of speakers because it's kind of, you know, it's always there. Maurice, you've been kind of a rather sort of quiet so far because we've very much been in Ollie's kind of ballpark. But what I'd of like course. To ask you about is kind of the feedback, because I mean you're out talking to people trying stuff every day. Mm-hmm. What kind of feedback are you getting when you kind of, you know, running some stuff up in front of people and they're having a listen?
Well, it kind of relates to what you said about not hearing the speaker. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. You don't want to hear the speaker. You want to hear the music, right? And all the things that Ollie just eloquently described and all of that, none of that is discussed with the client. Why? Because he actually doesn't care. He doesn't care as long as this product gives him, or her for that matter, what they need and what they want. Of course, we can go into depth about it, but at the end of the day, when we put the speakers up, you forget the speakers. So we don't talk about the technology necessarily unless somebody's really, really interested. But for us, it's all about what is this tool going to do? And what basically means is that when we hear the music and you don't hear the speaker, we can focus on the music. We can focus on the recording. We can focus on the first balances. We can focus on the imaging. We can focus on all these type of things that are super relevant for the engineer or the artist. Instead of, oh, what is this mid-range doing? Or, oh, what is that transmission line doing? No, they are not aware of that. It's crucial for the end result, but the end result is sitting in front of the speaker and not hearing the speaker. And that takes a whole different angle, right? And our clients are super aware of what it delivers to them, and they're happy that we can. And of course, the whole background technology that is a huge, huge part of this is what will give them that result that they're looking for. Mm. But the conversation rarely veers towards the technology. It veers more towards, oh, I can do a faster mix. Oh, I can spend more time with my family, or I can do more mixes in the same time and charge this more money, or all of these things that are relevant tools for engineers. That is the end result of all the work that Ollie and team and production and everybody has been putting together to give us, at the end of the day, in front of the client, this type of result. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. And, you know, it's such a contrasting view almost. Like we can go forever on the technology side, and I love doing that too. But the reality is that for the client, it's like, hey, like Julian said, you put the speakers right beside another set of speakers. And for me, it's the best way of basically showcasing what we can. We stop talking and we start listening. And the moment that happens, actually, it makes the job a lot easier. And for the client, it's an immediate awareness. They immediately will recognize what the differences are. And that saves us a lot of time, to be honest.
Yeah. I like what you said about saving time, because when you do mix, what you can't mix what you can't hear, right? So yeah. I often mix at home and then I go to a bigger studio and listen. I think I'm missing so much. So I would love to have something available to me that I can just hear accurately. I don't want it to sound good or better. I want to know exactly what I'm hearing is accurate so that I can address those issues, and also that it will translate to bigger speakers, bigger studios as well, which I think your speakers do, right? If I'm correct.
And that's what it's all about, translation, right? And also the trust that what you hear is really what you get. And you know, what a lot of people love indeed between our small speakers and the big speakers is that their voicing is pretty much identical. So you can really rely on what you're hearing when you work on some of the smaller systems, and then you take it over to the larger systems. It just means we get even more information. It didn't change your balance. It's not like, oh, suddenly my bass is gone or I have too much bass or anything like that. It's just that the larger the systems get, the larger the scale get, but also the larger the amount of information becomes that we can give you. Because at the end of the day, the speaker does only one thing. It gives you information. If you don't like the information, go back to work. It's exactly. up to you to fix it, right? Mm-hmm. And like you said yourself, you want to be able to rely on what you hear, good or bad. And the sooner you hear when something is bad, you can adjust it accordingly. And then what happens is that in your first passes or even during tracking or anything, you already bring the quality level higher. Because you immediately hear what's going on. You can adjust immediately instead of having to do a second pass or a third pass because you already addressed that immediately. So what happens is that your first demo could be already a really good mix.
Mm.
And I think you heard many times, sorry, oh, the demo was so good and we tried to remix it and all, we stuck with the demo. And
oh, yeah,
that,
yeah.
That happens too, you know? So for me, it's all about, okay, the speakers are a tool. And it sounds, you know, simple, but at the end of the day, that's what it is. Is this tool giving the engineer what they need? And, you know, can they rely on it and trust it and knowing that it will translate and instead of having to go to six other references? And those are the things that our clients really are aware of. And then when you start explaining it to technology, they go like, oh, yeah, okay, that I can see that now. But in all honesty, some of them would be interested. Others are just delighted that they can do what they can do. And are happy to know that we apparently know what we're doing. So that helps.
Aturia has a wide selection of software effects, including 3 compressors, 3 filters, 3 preamps, and 3 delays you'll actually use. The latest release, 3 delays you'll actually use, includes Delay Tape 201, Delay Memory Brigade, and the unique and experimental Delay Eternity. A bundle of selected effects, called the AudioFuse Creative Suite, is included with all AudioFuse audio interfaces. Visit Aturia.com to find out more on the effects you'll actually use.
Something I want to kind of steer us towards is, I mean, I've referred to kind of having heard some really impressive Dolby Atmos kind of demonstrations through PMC speakers. Mm-hmm. I mean, we should probably talk about kind of the relationship between PMC and kind of like the with Dolby and with Universal mm-hmm. Music, because I mean this is a thing. This is kind of, it's not a coincidence that when I've seen these Dolby Atmos demonstrations, they've been using PMC.
Well, yeah, it was actually really interesting to hear your conversation, Maurice, with Steve Jenowick about the Capitol Studio C Atmos build.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it was really good to hear you sort of work together with Steve and other mixers to sort of inform your product, right? And I think that's really important. So you didn't just sort of leave them in the lurch.
Oh, no.
You know, it was a real sort of collaborative effort.
It completely was. And just a kind of summarize it, when we started working with Capitol, and this goes back all the way to 2010, when we were doing the refurb of the whole building, which, by the way, we're doing again now. But at the end of the day, we started in 2010 and worked throughout all the studios. We developed a product for them, the QB1 at the time, that was installed in 2012, the first system there. And we worked very, very closely together with the engineers to give them, at the end, the tools that they needed. And the QB1 was one of those products. But when it came down to Atmos, at that point, we already had in Capitol Studio C a full 7.1 system because we did a lot of movie scores there. We built that system for the engineers that came there. And quite often in the past, a lot of the scoring engineers would have brought their own system, which 9 out of 10 times were PMCs. So they decided to do a complete 7.1 installation there. But then Dolby ended up in conversations with Universal Music Group about the format and what it could mean utilizing the format for music content. And the decision was then made, okay, let's start kind of testing this and trying this. So let's build a Dolby Atmos music studio, which didn't exist. It wasn't there, and nobody knew even what it was. But when that was put to the guys at Capitol, they were like, okay, let's call Maurice, because we already have PMC. Obviously, that was a choice that we made back then. And at the time, what was interesting, Dolby obviously had a lot of experience in the theatrical and the post market, and used at the time a different brand that was, you know, especially in the post, very very much used. But Capitol made a conscious decision back then not to use that. They wanted the higher resolution, the higher quality, etc. So they decided, no, we want to do this with PMC. So I was brought in and was explained, okay, what is it that we're trying to do here and how are we going to do it? Looking also at the size of the room, the amount of space that was available, you start to take all these things into account, because it wasn't a room that was designed for Atmos. It was a room that was designed for effectively stereo, and we turned it into a 7-1 room, but now it had to become Atmos. So quite often it's like, okay, speakers on stands against the wall, taking real estate away. It got really, really messy. But at the time, we also had some other speakers, the Wafer series, that were flat panel speakers, basically with the same components as our near field monitors. And I saw that as a great solution for the surround and overhead speakers. So it doesn't take away too much real estate. They could be kind of hidden even, so you didn't see them at all. Because trust me, 20 speakers staring you in the face might be a bit much sometimes.
Not very nice. Yeah.
And so I really went about it as in, okay, how can we utilize this? And looking at the technical specifications that Dolby, for instance, made in regards to, okay, what kind of angles it needed to have based on axis responses. But we had far more flexibility because of that, because of our off-axis response that was far wider and more accurate than many other manufacturers could deliver. So we had a lot of tools in our back, basically, to create Atmos systems that could be built into rooms that were not necessarily designed as Atmos rooms, but at a very, very high quality. So when we initially built the first room, and we utilized the Wafers for that, Dolby was kind of like, oh yeah, that's never going to work, right? Because how could it possibly? But it did, and it did actually really well. And both Capitol as well as Dolby were super enthusiastic about it, because that actually gave them another tool, thinking of, okay, with these type of speakers, you don't take over the room with speakers. We have lots more flexibility to perhaps in the future convert stereo rooms into Atmos rooms. So it became a real partnership between us. Also, we at the time already had a lot of credibility in the high-end, you know, engineering production industry for music, as where Dolby was primarily known for theatrical and post. So they also kind of needed a partner that had relevance in the music industry. So when we ended up building Capitol Studio C, that became immediately like a playground for the likes of Steve Janowick. Like, oh, how does this work? We don't know. Figure it out, which he did. And it started working with it. It also had my own personal interest, because I loved engineering. I was big in the whole surround thing. So from day one, I was involved and on both the room design as well as the actual music production side. And that allowed me to really think like an engineer and how to utilize our speakers as the right tools to create Atmos rooms. And within 5-6 months after doing Capitol, we actually built our own Atmos studio, which was pretty much a copy of what we did at Capitol and we did it in Highland Park, which became the second Dolby Atmos Music Reference Studio. So now we had two rooms so that we can switch between one and the other and move things and see how it translated. And Dolby ended up using that room a lot for educational sessions, but also for artist approvals, also for demos for even other labels that got involved, and of course the DSPs. And yeah, over time, us also promoting this format already in 2018 at the NAMM show, where we built our first Dolby Atmos studio on the show floor, and everybody came and had no idea what it was. And when they heard Atmos, oh, that's just another surround format, that's never going to go anywhere. Well, here we are, right? 6 years later, and look what happened. So yeah, for us, it was in a way a bit of a gamble to jump into it, but we went all in because we believed that, A, the music format was amazing. We love music and it opened up a whole other dimension. But on the other side, we also felt like, hey, this is a format where the consumer will finally be able to hear it back in many different ways, because that was the goal already back then. And we were just thankful that we were able to be part of this in a really strong partnership with Dolby and UMG at the time. So we ended up building basically all the Dolby Atmos studios for Universal Music Group, which include all their other labels like Republic and Interscope as well. But through that and us promoting the format at an AES show, at an AM, without Dolby even being involved at the time, I think that put us on the forefront of the Dolby Atmos music side. And then, yeah, the partnership with Dolby and UMG has been strong since.
The Production Expert Podcast is made possible using Source Connect Now from Source Elements, the free way to record high-quality audio over the internet. Need to record an interview or a podcast like this one remotely? With Source Connect Now, you can. Using a Chrome browser, you'll get ISDN equivalent quality audio without the need to install any additional software. Register for your free account at now.source-elements.com.
Yeah, I mean, purely from an aesthetic point of view, the wafer speakers look great. They save a lot of room. That's really sort of innovative and fantastic. And also your second Atmos room with the speakers hidden behind the fabric, I thought that was really cool. Yep. and really nice aesthetically.
I'm glad you said that, because I was going to say, I've been in that room at Capitol, and it was very much kind of, you could see the, you know, let's bring in some trust, let's put some speakers on it. I've also been in the London studio, the Ollie's in. Yeah. And you can see the front speakers, and that's basically it. And it shows for me a kind of a development. Personally, I mean, I can't help when I'm in a room like that, but to go around and kind of like listen and locate where the speakers are, I just have to know.
Yeah.
But the point is, for a client.
Yeah, me too. My natural desire is to be able to see all of the speakers, because obviously I'm a kind of techie gear junkie. But if you are trying to create that mix and you've got to close your eyes and visualize it, you do not want to see the speakers. You don't want to see the space between the speakers, because they aren't supposed to be there.
You're not supposed to listen to the speakers.
Exactly.
You're supposed to be listening to the music. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Well, there's another thing. There's one other thing to think about. If you think about how 5.1 was, and you had the speakers in the room and you knew exactly where they were because you could see them, as an engineer, you ended up mixing into the speakers. Right? It's channel-based. Mm. But when you're in Atmos, it's object-based. So yes. You can put the sound anywhere where you want. So it's irrelevant where the speakers are. Now, by taking away the visual, you have no idea where the speakers are, but you can put the sound wherever you want it to be. That is, for translation purposes, really, really crucial, right? Because in some rooms, it's a 714. In other rooms, it's a 916. Or like us, it's a 1316. And that was, of course, the strength of what Dolby could do to the renderer and re-render it to whatever kind of layout you would have. But by not showing the speakers, A, it's a little bit quieter in the room, of course, because it's less technical. But on the other side, as an engineer, you're not focusing on the speakers, which is kind of the recurring theme, as you notice. Like, we're not talking about speakers, we're talking about music. And how can I get a sound that will help my music production to a certain space or place in this room, regardless of where the speakers are? So if you think about it like that, it kind of makes a lot of sense to hide the speakers.
There was a really nice example, which is probably relevant to this, where it was at an event that you were at, Maurice, at the London studio, and we were listening to some Atmos content, like you'd imagine. And I remember there was a question from one of the people who were there. It was asking about how you can place an object between like a small ceiling speaker and one of these big, impressive mains at the front, and expect that to work. And it was kind of like, and it was a good question. I remember thinking, but it seems to work to me, you know? And I think, coming back to this idea that kind of like you're not hearing the speaker, because the magic mid-range thing that I'm so excited about this, that's possibly, I mean, it's probably in there, and kind of probably part of the reason why you can play something that's kind of halfway between a big speaker and a small speaker, and it still sound like it's coming from where it's supposed to.
Yeah, the biggest thing for that is what I mentioned earlier, it's the voicing. Okay, if we listen from our smallest speaker to our biggest speaker, the voicing is the same, right? That's really what we strive for, so that you get the feeling like, hey, things just got slightly bigger. Yes, we can go louder and maybe the scale, but this person's voice, for instance, has not changed, right? So for me to be able to go indeed from a big MB3 XPD on the front and bring it into the side channel where there's a CI-65 two-way instead of a large three-way system, how can I keep those things together? And that is the trick. And that's something that, especially in Atmos, a lot of manufacturers have a lot of trouble with, because if you go to their range of speakers, it's very hard to make them sound the same, right? And you will find one speaker might sound really like one way, and then the next model sounds different again. They're all good in their own right. But if you put them side by side, they're different. And that's what we're trying to avoid very much.
And in stereo, you wouldn't have different models from the same manufacturer
exactly.
in a stereo pair and expect to be able to get something yeah. sitting in the center.
You know, we are seeing sort of mid-level kind of hybrid type studios and home studios becoming a lot more popular. I hear often mm-hmm. sort of mix engineers and producers that want to maybe create an immersive setup but think, well, how am I supposed to compete with the bigger studios? So I was just wondering if you have a sort of solution to that where we can work from home maybe or work from a smaller studio and then it translates yep. to the bigger studio.
Absolutely, for the same reason, because what we end up doing, if we look at both the flat panel speaker, the CI series, we have different models in that, from really small to really, really large three ways. But the same goes for our normal main active speakers, whether we go to the big BB6 XBD Actives, the double 15 inches, or we can go to a PMC6, just a two-way near-field system. The beauty is, out of all our systems, I can mix and match to make it either a real small near-field Atmo system
mm-hmm.
or make it a really big combined, you know, reference room for, you know, where 20 people can sit in. But by mixing and matching all the different models, we basically have, and some of our dealers have also call it like Atmos packages, where they take a near-field system or a mid-field system in combination with then an active near-field LCR, but then with our CI series that you can hide again in the wall or in, especially in smaller rooms, right? You want to save a lot of real estate. So the flat panel speakers there, 4 inches deep on the wall, those are the space savers. And allow us to build in much smaller rooms that were originally stereo rooms to still incorporate full 714 or 914 Atmos rooms. And that has worked really well for us, where people might have their own room, but then they go to one of the bigger rooms, maybe for mastering or whatsoever, and they just know it translates. And in that sense, it's not any different than what we always did in stereo. People worked on smaller near fields from PMC, and they go to, let's say, Metropolis Mastering and sit in front of the big boys there, and they know it translated. And in that sense, it's all the same. It's just more.
Mm-hmm. And sonically as well, it translates well sonically. I imagine there isn't sort of a need to really adapt and make sort of a lot of mix tweaks. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And again, it's all credit then to Ollie and his team, because we can say what we want, but they have to do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, being able to sit in front of this small, let's say the PMC6s again, and just work and do your whole album, and then having the confidence of going to a mastering engineer that says, okay, I just need to do a bit of touching up, but I don't have to fix the mixes, right? And that is exactly what we're aiming for.
RSPE Audio Solutions design, sell, and install professional audio and video equipment. Their team are available by phone, live chat, or email to receive and process orders. They have everything you need to build or upgrade your home studio to ensure you can continue to work from home. If there is anything they can do to help, reach out or shop online at rspeaudio.com.
I'm realizing we're probably running a little bit long, so we need to cover anything that we need to cover before we close the show out. We've been talking about cabinets a lot, as we should be. We haven't really sort of referred to drivers and kind of DSP stuff. I mean, all of the, obviously they have drivers, but the PMCs I had, there is some DSP in there, which is pretty recent, is it not, for PMC? I'm not entirely sure. The 22s had DSP, but sort of going back in time, kind of the TBs and LBs and stuff, they were all analog, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we were fairly late to the DSP game. Like anything. We didn't want to implement any kind of technology until we were fully satisfied that it was 100% the right thing to do and a step forward to kind of push forward the sonic performance of our speakers. So we kind of wanted to wait a little while until some of those DSP chips and the associated converters kind of got up to the right quality for us.
Okay, I mean, I'm seeing kind of like there's probably kind of like a pressure, without wanting to put words in your mouth, for the with the move into Atmos monitoring, of just kind of like there's a level of control and kind of, you know, exponentially building complexity really when you're talking about system alignment and setup, and surely that must be advantageous to have that on board in the speakers. rather than relying on some kind of like external solution? I mean, maybe not, but was that a factor?
It kind of was. I mean, like our journey into the DSP technology, which is pretty much throughout all of the PMC Studio series of products now. I mean, when we first got on the DSP scene, it was because we got to the point that we could see how we could optimize our speakers to perform better with some of the tools that you've got within like a DSP chipset, what you can do with the crossover and some drive unit optimization. And so that was kind of like you said, on the 22 series was the first product, which was back in 2009, maybe, no, 2010. And then we applied the same thing with a whole suite of new electronics for the big PMC monitoring systems. And then 3 years ago, we brought out the new PMC kind of small to mid-level monitors, which have another grade of DSP in them. But they also have a full feature set of parametric EQs and filters that can be applied within the DSP of the speaker themselves, which very much was from our understanding of the installations and markets, which, yeah, like you were pointing out, we want to have a bit more adjustability to configure and align the speakers to different acoustic environments. And it was important for us to be able to do that in the speaker, in the DSP itself.
So something I have to say about having had the 6.2s here was I really like the fact that when you power them up, they show you their IP address on the back and just type that in and you're in. And it's kind of like, thank you, I didn't need to look anything up. I worked it out on my own. But something else that I was, when I took them over to Cube, a friend's studio local to me, and we ran them up there, and I didn't want to have to kind of completely change everything around at his place. We were dropping them in, they weren't staying, they were coming back out. But the easiest way to level match them was to bring the level of the PMCs up, and I thought, oh, am I going to be able to do that on the back? Is it just going to be attenuation, or am I going to be able to boost enough off the back of these so that I can just keep it in the box? And thankfully, I saw there was a healthy amount of boost available as well as attenuation. It's like, thank you, great. I had to go quite a long way, actually. So, you know, all of that stuff, these were very specific to me. But the thing is, it's kind of, can you? Yes, you can. And that's exactly what you want from any kind of piece of hardware you're having to deal with, or software for that matter. We are definitely running long now. So, I mean, I'm expecting kind of like a sort of embarrassed silence after I ask this, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because we usually do on these ones where we have people in from brands. What, if anything, can you share about future developments at PMC?
Right, okay.
That was really
that was the one I was waiting for. It's fine, no one's listening.
Right, here's the politician's answer. I'll go for this. I mean, okay, so Dad started PMC 33 years ago, purely in the belief, as we touched on before, he's an audiophile. He loves music, he loves producing music, and he loves listening to it back. He wants to push the boundaries of what loudspeaker design can do because of his passion for audio. He came from the BBC, and so it comes from a very technical engineering perspective, and we're trying to push through innovation and like attention to detail, as well as what Maurice was saying about working with the creators of music to understand what the new technologies should be that go into our products. And we are very much focusing on our R&D department now to develop new technologies which will get us excited to put them into new products. We're not going to develop new products now just for the sake of it. We've got a wonderful spread of studio monitors, from the small Result 6, which is kind of like our entry-level perfect bedroom studio set of speakers, all the way up to the biggest QB1 XBDs, which are the highest performing speakers in the world. You know, we've got the whole range there. So it's very much going to be technology-led. And all I can say is that we have a number of different technologies which are developing at the moment, which I can't wait to get into new products. So there you go. I've said a lot and nothing at the same time.
Excellent. Well, I mean, you know, that's fair enough, you know, but what we should do now is we should move to Find of the Week.
We should. Julian, why don't you start first?
Me? Well,
yeah,
okay,
why not?
So I do a podcast most weeks, have been for a very long time, and I haven't changed how I've done it. In the whole time, actually, I tie up an indecent amount of hardware doing it. For various reasons, I'm not actually running through the 1073 today, but usually I'm running through an extremely nice BAE 1073 into a Focusrite Red 4 Pre. I'm using basically one input and two outputs on a 64-channel audio interface, and I'm using some really, really nice mic pre, which while it sounds lovely, to be honest, is there for the gain. Because I'm using a dynamic mic like people do in times like this. Anyway, I'm getting, I was hoping it would be here by now when I wrote this on my Find of the Week, a Focusrite Vocaster 2, just because that's got 70 dB gain on the preamp. It's got the hard loopback in hardware that I like and I kind of insist on for this kind of thing. And while it's not going to do it better than I'm doing, it probably shouldn't, because I'm using kind of like, you know, $4,000-$5,000 worth of hardware to do it, and it's a $250 interface. But the point is, I'm going to be able to pop that into a bag and do a podcast from anywhere at all, which is something at the moment I kind of struggle to do. So, you know, I'm looking forward to getting that, just because it does the job. I'm expecting it to do it rather well. And it's focused, you know what I mean? Excuse the pun. But yeah, so I will be able to, I no longer will I have to plan, you know, trips somewhere or stuff around my podcast schedule.
Well, that's nice, because you could potentially just do it from a hotel room or anywhere, right? Did you travel a lot?
Me?
In general?
Never.
Yeah. Never.
I live
you might
in Cornwall.
Be tempted
it takes
to
far
now.
Too long to get anywhere, and I'm already where everyone goes on holiday. But the point is, I don't have to be in my studio. You know.
Oh, well, that's handy.
Yeah, absolutely. So there we are. That was my find of the week.
Brilliant. Maurice, what's your find of the week?
Well, it's kind of two, to be honest with you, because although, yes, I know you guys always focus on gear, so I kind of have one on that. But I have one on the music side. I don't know if that's okay.
We do like those.
Okay. Well, okay. So we recently had the NAMM show, as you know, and you know, we only have very few moments where we actually can walk around ourselves. But while there, we walked by the Voyage Audio booth that had this incredible spatial mic. And, you know, us being so fully integrated with Atmos and all, that, of course, caught my attention. And I thought that was really interesting, the software also that comes with it. And, you know, we have been promised that we can get one so we can mess around with it a lot. But that's something that I felt like, this is really intriguing, because it has a lot of the things that I think a lot of engineers are asking for. I believe, you know, there was one other magazine, I think, already that did a review on it. I haven't read it yet, but just what they showed me there, that was really intriguing. And I think the integration, especially if it comes down to the creative side of Atmos recording, because we so far have been talking primarily about Atmos mixing, but recording for Atmos and the creative side of that's something I think that will open up a whole new realm of possibilities. So I'm kind of intrigued by that spatial mic that they have. So I definitely want to explore that a little bit further. I don't know enough about it. It was literally something that caught my attention. I'm like, I want to know more about. So I figured, let me share that. But the other part is, and that's kind of where I count myself extremely lucky the whole time, is that when we work in the studios and we engineer a lot ourselves, I still try to do one or two projects a year myself, especially on the Atmos mixing side. So I get into studios and I hear a lot of incredible music that certain people might not always hear. But there was definitely one project that is going to be released actually in March, I believe, on Domino Records. It's an LA-based artist, independent artist called Julia Holter, and she has an album coming out that I think it's called From Something in the Room. And I heard that. I heard the Atmos mix, and I was just utterly blown away, because it's really alternative music. It uses the space incredibly well. There's ambient, direct sounds. There's a lot that is in there, and I was really taken by it, because I have heard, I'm not kidding you, thousands and thousands of Atmos tracks, and a lot by the popular artists and a lot back catalog and this and that. But this was something where I felt like, wow, really interesting music, incredibly well mixed. And I thought, you know what, I want to give that one a shout out, because that really took me. So I hope by the time it's released somewhere in March that more people will hear it, because they definitely should, because it, it, yeah, I thought it was stunning.
And what did you like about the use of the Atmos techniques?
I felt that the way they utilized the space, and I was able to hear it back in our studio, so where songs were intimate, the space felt very small and really close, and direct sounds were really like there in whisper mode, shall we say. So it had my attention to all the detail that was happening, but it took me not away from the music. I was fully in the music. And then when it became spacious and larger, and there was a really nice kick drum hitting me that I felt in the chest, there was such a combination of different techniques that were utilized in that mix that I felt like, wow, okay, somebody has been listening to a lot of different styles of music and brought it all together. And, you know, for me, it ticked a lot of boxes. So that's why I felt like, hey, I want to pass this one on for sure.
I'm really glad you've mentioned something like that, Maurice, just because it's a conversation we've had a few times recently about music that's being conceived from during its initial production with spatial in mind, immersive mixing in mind, rather than it being, you know, legacy art stuff, you know, which obviously is going to get done, but that already exists, and there's you know, that brings with it preconceptions.
And especially it's an independent artist, right? Well, it's a small label. It's Domino. Mm. Well, small label, shall we say. Mm. But there's some amazing music that the independents have. And for them, it's not always so easy to have a production in Atmos as well. And I think they just hit it out of the park. So well done.
Mm.
Excellent. Ollie, what about you? What's your find of the week?
So I would say similar to yours, Julian. Again, at the NAMM show, wandering around, our friends over at Audient have produced the Aria, which is another
interface. I know it well, yeah.
Loved it so much and so intrigued by it that we stole one away. And then at the next show, which was literally this last week, ISE in Barcelona, we used that Aria unit to play back a Atmos demonstration. On our booth, on our stand, and the whole box, it's set up and ready to go, and is very easy to configure for an immersive audio setup, and it is incredibly good value.
Excellent, because I mean, there was a few questions when I went to the launch event, and there was some people were asking questions about, because it's USB, it's not Thunderbolt, and also I thought it was interesting that it had some mic pres on the front, which goes back to Maurice's point about Atmos, you know, at the tracking stage as well as a mixing process. So, I mean, you found it, you know, as effective as it should be in use.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's going back to what we were talking about with the concern that an Atmos or an immersive audio studio is going to be so incredibly unobtainably expensive that you're never going to get there. And this kind of bridges that by bringing down the cost of that interface without compromising too much on quality, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
And like the user interface, the ease of setup when you're setting up whatever it is, 17, 18 channels, it's super easy. I loved it.
Sure, yeah. Sonarworks integration in hardware and all of that stuff. And yeah, great product, though. Agreed. Mm. Excellent.
Very nice.
All right. Asher, what about you?
Yes. Well, to quote Graham Kirkman on a podcast previously, everybody loves a free plugin, right?
So, <That's quite great>.
Yeah. Mine is a plosive remover by, and I have to be careful when I say this, Crumple Pop. It's a pop remover. And it basically automatically removes plosive noises, and it uses advanced AI with real-time playback. And it's really, really simple. The GUI is really simple. And I use it actually for editing podcasts and dialogue. So if you're looking for a free plugin, then Graham, are you listening? Go get this plugin. It's pretty good. So.
Excellent.
<Yeah.
laughs> Well, that's a real find. Nice. And everyone's going to be listening very closely when I say pop. So, you know, we'll see where that one
comes
out.
Yes, exactly. So,
thank you later. And that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you to Asher. Ollie, Maurice, thank you enormously. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Production Expert Podcast.